Want to virtualize your biggest workloads? Bring the performance of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Hey everybody, welcome back for another episode of TechNet Radio for Hyper-V from a VMware admin's perspective. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft covering private cloud and hybrid cloud, and I have with me today our good friend Andy Surwich from Trivalent Group in Michigan. Hey, hi Andy, how are you today?
Good, how's it going, Keith?
Very good. Well, thanks for joining us again today. Andy, before we get started, do you want to give everyone just a real quick introduction and talk a little bit about what you do at Trivalent Group?
Sure. And again, thanks for having me on the show, Keith. My name is Andy Surwich. I'm a virtual systems administrator with the Trivalent Group. Trivalent Group is a services provider in the Southern Michigan area, and we focus on letting our customers manage, access, protect, and store their data. That's our focus and our business model, and we do that via a number of different means, whether it's professional services, managed services, or colo and cloud offerings as well. So personally, what I do from a day-to-day basis at Trivalent is, again, virtual systems administrator, so I'm working with hypervisors all day long, running updates, working with virtual machines, moving VMs here, moving VMs there, making sure things are highly available. Covering kind of that aspect of things, primarily with our managed customers. So that's kind of what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, great. And as I understand it, historically, Trivalent Group had started out using VMware as your primary platform. And over the last several years, some of that's been moving over towards the Hyper-V direction. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, we've kind of seen a shift in the marketplace a little bit. You know, we're still primarily using VMware at this point, but we're starting to move into the Hyper-V space because, you know, me personally, I've kind of seen the awesomeness that is Hyper-V, and I've really started pushing that myself as well. So definitely seeing some good stuff out of the Hyper-V space.
Sure. And with your customers in particular, Andy, I'm sure that as you're architecting platforms for providing services, whether they're managed services or even on-premises solutions, that high availability is probably a concern that you and your customers are both considering as you put forth those new solutions. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone wants HA. You know, people don't want their stuff to go down ever. So HA is definitely important.
Sure. And certainly on the VMware side, HA has been a component of vSphere and standard and Enterprise Plus editions for quite a while. But it's something that you really kind of had to pay for, right? And so a lot of environments, what I find is if you're primarily virtualizing Windows Server VM workloads, you already have Hyper-V that you're purchasing as part of Windows Server, right?
That's always a big selling point in the sales process. You know, you're already paying for these licenses, so you already have HA. You already have all these goodies right in the box. So that's definitely a good selling point.
Yeah, and when we think about HA clustering on top of Hyper-V being included with both the free version of Hyper-V Server 2012 R2 as well as the paid version of Windows Server 2012 R2 Data Center Edition, really, when you think about clustering, it really is enterprise ready today, right? I mean, we can build clusters up to 64 hosts in size, 64 physical hosts with up to 8,000 VMs. In fact, I think even with the latest version of vSphere, they're about half of that, if I recall correctly. Is that right, Andy?
Yeah. If I remember correctly, yeah. It's been a while since I've looked at the config maximums, but I think that's about right.
Yeah, all being managed with the built-in tools with Windows Server 2012 R2 and Hyper-V. You can build some pretty enterprise-level stuff. The other piece that I find as interesting, I don't know if you've seen this with your customers as well, is that oftentimes they're not only clustering and concerned with high availability of the virtualization hosts, but they're also concerned with as high availability as possible of the virtual machines, of the guests that they're running on top of those virtualization hosts.
See that a lot with SQL, it seems to be the big one. Sometimes Exchange, but Exchange is a little different monster in that respect.
Yeah, sure. Any of the kind of the utilities, quote unquote, that a customer is running as a staple in their environment. So SQL, Exchange, in some cases even IIS web farms or file server clusters or whatnot. So if we're running those as virtual machines, kind of the nice thing about Windows Server and Hyper-V is that the same failover clustering technology that we use to administer a Hyper-V host cluster can also be extended and managed using the same exact tools into VMs that are running on top of that Hyper-V host cluster as well for really super fast failover times, right?
Right. Yeah, that was always one of my favorite things about the tools included in Hyper-V. You know, it's all stuff I'm already used to. I don't have to learn some new tool or some utility to allow me to do my job. I mean, it's stuff I'm already used to. So that's always been one of my personal favorite things.
Yep, definitely. And when you're getting ready to build out your Hyper-V hosts, there's a little bit of prep work to do, obviously. You have to have some shared storage between your Hyper-V clustered hosts, but we've got some pretty cool options for shared storage now with storage spaces and Hyper-V over SMB, which I think we talked about perhaps in some of our earlier episodes on TechNet Radio.
Episode 3, I believe,
Yeah, definitely. And then networking is another concern. You know, how do we make the networks really resilient? Yep. But network teaming is a built-in feature to be able to make networks ultra resilient and have lots of bandwidth when we're putting lots of VMs on top of a highly available cluster.
Yep.
In terms of networking, I don't know about you, but what I see most IT pros doing is when they build out a clustered environment, they're primarily considering four types of networks, right? There's the VM network that the VMs are using to communicate over the network. But then the cluster itself generally has a cluster network for exchanging information between the clustered hosts. And oftentimes, I see IT pros building out a live migration network as well, so that they have a separate network interface or set of network interfaces for live migrating VMs back and forth between the hosts or live storage migrating. And then depending on their storage architecture, maybe a storage network as well for accessing SMB storage or perhaps even iSCSI storage or whatnot across those hosts. Is that a similar design that you see as well for a lot of IT pros?
Yeah, that seems to be, you know, the standard for the most part. Really, the only deviation we ever see is, you know, maybe they have fiber for their storage instead of iSCSI, you know?
Sure. So they're using fiber channel instead as that storage network,
Right.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, with the nature that a lot of environments are moving towards converged networking, all those networks don't necessarily have to be separate physical adapters. They could be a couple 10-gig adapters. You're teaming them together and then splitting those networks out as separate VLAN interfaces, for instance, using the built-in NIC teaming drivers or logical switch support that's in System Center. So, great. Okay. Well, what do you say, Eddie? Does it make sense to switch over into our lab and maybe take a look at some of the basics of setting up and managing a Hyper-V cluster?
Yeah, should be some good stuff, yeah.
Great. Well, I'll see you in the lab shortly. Well, Andy, here we are. We're in our lab environment, and we're looking at the console of one of our Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V hosts. This is a host that we've got the full GUI installed on, but we could do clustering very similarly with Server Core. Do you see a lot of Server Core use, Andy, in your client environments or in your own data center?
Starting to see a little bit more adoption of it. I think, at least my personal opinion is, it seems like a lot of administrators were kind of scared of it at first, but starting to see a little bit more adoption now that there's some more information out there about it.
Sure, yeah. So once you have your Hyper-V hosts up and running, to install the failover cluster features, whether it's a local server that has the full GUI or a remote server that's running Server Core, or even our free Hyper-V Server 2012 product, it's really easy to do. From Server Manager, we just pop into our Manage menu and open up the Add Roles and Features wizard. And as we step through that wizard, we'll tell it that we want to do a role or feature-based installation, select the local or remote servers that we wish to install the clustering features on top of. So I'll just pick one of my servers in the list here. Go ahead and click Next. And as we progress through the wizard past our roles page into the features list, you'll see failover clustering as one of the features that gets installed in order to bring all of the high availability features down to that host for making it a node within a cluster. And then along the way, depending on your storage architecture, there's also some other features that you may wish to install, like multipath I/O or network load balancing as well, in order to be able to have the appropriate network infrastructural features in place as well.
You know, real quick, I just like to say that Server Manager here, I think, is one of the coolest additions that they did with 2012 and 2012 R2. Really makes it easy to install these roles and gives you that single pane of glass overview. You mentioned Server Core earlier. You know, shameless plug here, but if you're curious about getting your Server Core boxes to a point to where it's manageable with this interface, I got a couple posts out on my blog about this if you're interested. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. You know, shameless plug. Just great. Disclaimer, you know.
Sure. And if you are interested in that, you'll find a link to Andy's blog right down at the bottom of the page that you can click on and find those articles. Thanks for sharing that, Andy.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely. So once we've installed the failover clustering feature, and it looks like it's already installed on the particular host that I select, we just progress through, click the install button. It would install those features. The failover clustering services don't require any restart after the install. And then in order to begin building your cluster, once each of your hosts have that failover clustering feature up and running, over on our tools menu, we just launched the Failover Cluster Manager tool. And I've actually already got that tool open in a window down at the bottom here. So I'm just going to pop that open. Failover Cluster Manager is a great tool because it allows us to create and manage clusters of Hyper-V hosts, of storage, or even clusters of applications that are running within VMs. And the nice thing is you can have multiple clusters like I do here. So I've got a storage cluster, my SAN cluster, and then I've got my Hyper-V cluster, my HV cluster. And you can have multiple clusters all registered into one console with Failover Cluster Manager and manage them from within that consistent interface. Well, for our hosts that we had just prepped with the failover clustering feature, in order to create a new cluster around them, right at the top of Failover Cluster Manager, we would just go over to our Actions menu over on the right. And you'll see a couple choices that we can use. One's called Validate Cluster, one's called Create Cluster. The Validate configuration choice I really like because it's basically in 2012 and in 2012 R2, it's a best practices analyzer tool to take a look at your hosts. And before you even step through trying to create a cluster, it makes sure that some of the common best practices for building those hosts are followed, that the hosts are both online and available, they can both see the same networks, they can both see the same storage, and before you get into the middle of creating a cluster and possibly having some connectivity issues, it's a great tool to be able to step through the process of validating that your hosts are being built correctly. Now, I know you probably have a lot of experience with clustering too, Andy. I know back from the old days of NT4.0 clustering with the, what we used to call back then Wolfpack clustering, I think. Clustering can be a little touchy in its hardware and connectivity configurations, and a lot of those best practices that have been collected across the years have been baked into this Validate configuration tool to make it super easy to take a base set of servers and get them into a cluster. So I'd highly recommend going through the Validate configuration before you're clustering, just to make sure that the base hosts are configured correctly and in a way that's going to get them to perform well in a cluster. Once we've gone through that Validate configuration, then we're ready to create the cluster. So we can go ahead and create the cluster, step through the process of entering the server names that we wish to cluster together. So I just enter in a couple of my standalone Hyper-V hosts that I've installed the failover clustering feature on. I'll add them in. It'll give me an option right from within the Create Cluster Wizard tool to also run that validation. So if you've already run the validation separately and resolved any warnings or errors that it's reported on, you can say, no, I don't want to run the validation again. But if you haven't run the validation yet, then I definitely would say yes, and it'll go through the same process of running that validate configuration choice. Now, it's important to point out that this validate configuration tool is something that we can use not only before and during building a cluster, but we can also use it after the fact once our cluster is created. So if you build a cluster in your environment, it's working fine, and then a few months later, maybe one of the junior admins on your team has gone in and disabled a network interface accidentally or done some configuration changes to your cluster that you suspect are causing problems, but you're not quite sure what they changed, you can always run that validate configuration after the fact to go back and diagnose what issues may be occurring and give you recommendations on how to resolve those issues. So the validate configuration tool is is really useful. Now, I've already run it, so I'm not going to run it again, just to save a little bit of time.
The place where I've always found that validation tool to be especially useful is if you're making fundamental changes to the cluster, either at a hardware level or a software level, just as a check for myself and for my own comfort. I always run that afterwards just to make sure everything's kosher. So definitely a great tool.
Yeah, definitely. Yep, I agree. Well, once we've gone through the validation, the next point is to name our cluster. And the cluster name that we enter is going to be the virtual computer name, if you will, for our cluster when we're connecting to it from within Failover Cluster Manager. So over here in my two pre-existing clusters, you'll see their names that I gave. So I called one KEM Lab HV for my Hyper-V cluster, and I called the other one for my storage cluster, KEM Lab SAN for CN. So whatever cluster name we enter here is the name that we'll connect to after the cluster is created, when we're managing that cluster from within the Failover Cluster tool. So I'll just create a second Hyper-V cluster, click Next, and I already created that apparently as well, so let's create a third Hyper-V cluster, click Next. Oh, let's try one more. How about a fourth one? I've done a few different clusters in my environment. Aha.
I was gonna say, how many do you have over there?
Yeah, we've got pretty extensive lab. So, it'll go through the process. Oh,
or
let's
was
see.
Found.
Oh, so let's try this. How
number
about
five.
If we say, yep, one more.
There we go.
Hey, all there right. we go. So you can see how important it is to document your cluster name so that you know what's going to be used. So we're going to create a new cluster named HVC05 with two nodes initially. We can certainly add additional nodes after the fact. And we're going to tell it to add any of the shared storage that they have in common that they can both see into the cluster. And it's going to go out to DHCP and grab an IP address for that new cluster name. That IP address and the cluster name will float back and forth between all of the nodes in our cluster so that if one of our nodes goes down, that cluster management interface will just go over to one of the other remaining nodes and keep the cluster up and running. So we typically step through the process of clicking Next and then creating our cluster. I'm actually going to cancel out of this just to save a little bit of time because we already have our cluster created. So we'll just cancel out of that. And then, so now that we've gone through the steps of creating our cluster, let's look at what's involved in connecting to a cluster. So I'm just going to right-click on Failover Cluster Manager, connect to a cluster, key in one of those cluster names, and once we connect to it, that cluster name will appear under Failover Cluster Manager, just like we have our pre-existing HV cluster. So the overview screen gives us some basic management information. It tells us which of the physical nodes within the cluster is currently running the management name and that we're connecting to. It shows us how many networks are in the cluster, if there's any recent cluster errors or warnings that have occurred. And down below, it gives us short links for configuring out all of our various roles. So if we wanted to add new physical nodes or configure existing VMs as highly available VMs, we can certainly do that. We also have some navigate choices that allow us to jump to pages to see more information. So if we wanted to see what the physical nodes were in our environment, we can click on nodes and we'll jump right over to the nodes page. We'll see both of our nodes are currently up and running and available. If we needed to take one of our nodes offline, we can go ahead and pause it and drain all the roles. And what the cluster will do is it'll use live VM migration to take any VMs that were actively running on that node. If we needed to do hardware maintenance, we drain them off to one of our to across our remaining nodes and put that node into a maintenance mode, into a paused state, so that we can then take it down, do some hardware work on it, not have to worry about affecting any of the VMs that we're running on it. So live migration is integrated right into the pause and resume of our physical nodes. For the virtual machines that we're creating as highly available virtual machines on top of our cluster, we've got a couple ways that we can bring those virtual machines into our cluster. If we have some existing virtual machines that were already up and running on our hosts when they were standalone Hyper-V hosts before the cluster was created, we can just jump into configure role and step through the process of configuring any of those pre-existing virtual machines as highly available virtual machines, bringing them into our cluster. So for my role, I'll just select virtual machine, click next, and it'll show me a list of all of the virtual machines that are running across either of the nodes within my cluster that aren't yet brought into the cluster as highly available VMs. So I would just check those various virtual machines that I wish to make highly available, step through the process of bringing them into the cluster, and once they're in the cluster, I see the representation of each virtual machine, just like I have in my roles list here. So we've got a couple VMs. It shows us which physical host those VMs are running on. And now the cool thing is that once I'm managing these virtual machines that are highly available, Failover Cluster Manager serves sort of the same purpose as Hyper-V Manager does, where I can right-click on any of those VMs. I can connect to them via a remote console connection. I can shut them down. I can start them up or pause them. I can drop into VM settings. I can configure replication. I can do live moves of the VM or of the storage, all from within Failover Cluster Manager. Now, the other piece that I can do is I can also assign startup priorities to each of my VMs. So when I bring these VMs into the cluster, they'll all come in as medium VMs initially. But if I wanted to order those VMs so that maybe certain VMs are running Active Directory or database services and I want them to start up first when they're starting up in the cluster, I can set them to high so that they'll start first. I can have my next round of VMs start as medium priority, and then my final set of VMs start as low priority. And if I wanted to assign a certain affinity for my VMs with particular hosts, I can also drop right into the properties and be able to select the preferred physical hosts that I wish this VM to run on. So I can have some VMs running on one group of hosts within the cluster, other VMs running on another group of hosts within the cluster.
That's so really useful. I want to interject there real quick. That's really useful, in my opinion, for virtual domain controllers in situations where you don't want your only two DCs on a single host.
Sure.
Because then you run into big problems there. So that's especially useful for your DCs.
Sure. We could have one DC virtual machine with a preferred owner of HVO2 and the other one with a preferred owner of HVO3 as the two different hosts in this case. Yep, definitely. So we can bring in any of our existing VMs as highly available VMs, but we also have the ability over under Actions and Virtual Machines just to create new virtual machines from the get-go as highly available virtual machines, where we select the host that we wish to have that VM running on initially when it's configured and provisioned, and then step through the process of building that from scratch as a new highly available VM. So we've got basically Failover Cluster Manager turning into our console for managing our HA environment. So you can see using the tool Failover Cluster Manager, you have the ability to create and manage very easily a cost-effective high availability scenario for Hyper-V and for other applications as well that are running on top of your Hyper-V hosts. Now, Andy, I don't know about you. A lot of the time, while high availability in and of itself is a great core feature set, and we've seen how we can manage all those basic capabilities within Failover Cluster Manager, a lot of times IT pros are also looking for that next step of being able to do like load balancing and resource management in a more automated fashion across the host. Are you seeing a lot of customers of yours interested in those features as well?
You know, some of the more medium to enterprise size customers are kind of looking for those capabilities. Most customers just want HA, but the larger ones are definitely interested in kind of that DRS type of functionality. Yep.
Sure, yeah, something similar to like the VMware DRS capabilities. Yep. And so the great news is you can build your base HA infrastructure just with Windows Server 2012, Hyper-V, and Failover Cluster Manager. And then as you get to that point where you want to add dynamic optimization of resources for intelligent placement of new VMs or for ongoing load balancing of VMs across your Hyper-V hosts within your cluster, that's where System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager comes into place, where it has dynamic optimization policies for managing performance and managing power and intelligently placing VMs that builds on top of the base high availability capabilities of Failover Cluster Manager. Well, what do you think, Andy? Do these features, do they make a lot of sense in the environments that you're working in?
Yeah, I mean, this is all stuff that people want. You know, when customers come to us, they want stuff to be scalable easily, And then they want to be online all the time. So these are, you know, it's all relevant. It's all great stuff.
Great. Well, let's meet back up at the office, and we'll take a look at summarizing what we've done and give some other great resources that IT pros can use if they wish to build out clustered environments in their own lab.
Sure.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for joining me today to discuss high availability and Hyper-V with all of our friends on TechNet Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Keith. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, sure thing. And for those of you that are watching today, if you're interested in building out your own proof of concept or pilot lab environment using Hyper-V and Windows Server 2012 R2 and Failover Cluster Manager, down at the bottom of the page, you'll find some links to Andy's blog and my blog, where we've got some great resources, as well as a link to a step-by-step guide that you can use for taking our free Hyper-V Server 2012 and 2012 R2 products and building a highly available cluster for free using those free bare metal enterprise grade hypervisors. So be sure to check that out and let Andy and I know what you think as you're going through the process of building it out in your own lab. Well, thanks so much, everybody, for joining us today. Be sure to join us next time, where Andy and I will be back to look at more features of Hyper-V from a VMware admin's perspective. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone. See ya.